Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Trouble, double, double. Trouble, double, double. Shoodle rock. So she didn't have a daughter, so she didn't have a son. She said the lift doesn't run, run up the stairs and come. And if you don't come quick, you're not gonna know that gun. So I grab a bunch of clothes and I started to run. Here I come, whoa. 2 months later, she said, come and get your son. Cause I don't want your baby to come tie me down. Now because you are old and I am young. Yes, while I'm young, yes, I wanna have some fun. Run me down, shouldly waddle. I don't want your baby to come tie me down, I got you out.
wiser than spies way. Extra broad, extra broad, extra broader than Broadway. And the intercom roll, they tell me to come. That she didn't have a daughter, that she didn't have a son. Here I come. Clean, cause I'm broad, I'm broad, I'm broader than Broadway. Yes, I'm broad, I'm broad, I'm broader than Broadway. Over the ocean and over the sea, all of the girls and my folks, for we, we.
Yo, look at Grinch with them stupid bell bottom pants, man.
Your Word. Shoes, man, they make you look like a fool.
Word!
Why, you dive turkeys, I'll knock you through Sunday and be waiting for you on Monday. You're too young to have seen the sights of Esther Mammy and Pappy about Dolomite.
Planet Earth, it was my place of birth, born to be the sole controller of the universe. Besides the part of the map, I hit first. Any environment I can adapt. When it gets worse, the rough gets going, the going gets rough. When I start blowing the mic, mic bust. The next day to shake from the power I generate. People in Cali used to think it was earthquakes. It's hard on the boulevard, so I fold guard and never get scarred. I'm scarred, but it seems like I'm locked in hell. Looking over the edge, but the R never fell. A trip to slip, cause my knife got grip. Stand on my own 2 feet and come equipped. Any stage I'm seen on, a mic I fiend on. I stand alone and need nothing to lean on. Going for self with a long way to go. So much to say, but I still flow slow. I come correct and I won't look back. Cause it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even the
nobody smiling.
Relax in my room and escape from New York and return through the wound of the world as a thought. Thinking how hard it was to be born. Me being queen with no physical form. Playing yourself with one destination to reach the best part, it's life's creation. 9 months later, a job well done. Make way, cause here I come. Since I made it this far, I can't stop now. There's a will and a way, and I got the know-how to be all I can be and more. And see all there is to see before. I'm called to go back to the essence. It's a lot to learn, so I study my lessons. I thought the ghetto was the worst that could happen to me. I'm glad I listened when my father was rapping to me. Cause back in the days, they lived in caves. Exiled from the original man and straight away. Now that's what I call hard times. I'd rather be here to exercise the mind. Then I take the thought around the world twice. From knowledge to form, back to knowledge precise. Across the desert, that's hot as the Arabian. But they couldn't cave me in, cause I'm the Asian. Reaching for the city of Mecca, visit Medina. Visions of Nefertiti, then I seen her. Mind keeps traveling, I'll be back after. I stop and think about the brothers and sisters in Africa. Return the thoughts through the eye of a needle. For miles I fought and I just brought the people. Under the dark skies, on the dark side. Not only there, but right here to the far side. So now is the time for us to react. Take a trip through the mind and when you get back, understand your third eye seen all of that. It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even the
nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
Even though
nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
No more props, I want property in every barrel. Nobody's stopping me because the feral rhymes I make give me real estate for me to own. Wherever I bless a microphone, 007 is back and relaxing, on point and reacting, and ready for action. I'm so low-key that you might not see me, incognito and taking it easy. Why I just kept doing a hush-hush in front of a crowd. I get loud as a bone rush for calm. Keep a low pro and play the background. Over the whack, rapper put the mic back down. So rip it, break it in half, go ahead and slam it. Cause when it's time to build, I'm a mechanical bonding, amending, attaching and blending. So many solos, there is no ending. People in my neighborhood, they know I'm good. From London to Hollywood, wherever I stood. Footprints remain on stage ever since. Sidewalks and streets, I leave fossils. And then, when I had sex, I left my name on next. My trademark was left throughout the projects. I used to get rich when I played CeeLo. When I roll 4, 5, 6, they go veto. So I collect my cast and slide. I got my back, my guns on my side. It shouldn't have to be like that. I guess it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Even the
nobody's smiling. Nobody's smiling.
I'm from the
no, 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 no
I want you to stay in.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
Fred.
In America, black people are treated very much as the Vietnamese people or any other colonized people because we're used, we're brutalized. The police in our community occupy our area, our community, as a foreign troop occupies territory. And the police are there not to, in our community, not to promote our welfare or for our security and our safety, but they're there to contain us, to brutalize us and murder us. Because they have their orders to do so. And just as the soldiers in Vietnam have their orders to destroy the Vietnamese people, the police in our community couldn't possibly be there to protect our property because we own no property. They couldn't possibly be there to see that we receive the due process of law for the simple reason that the police themselves deny us the due process of law. And so it's very apparent that the police are only in our community, not for our security, but the security of the business owners in the community, and also to see that the status quo is kept intact.
Of slave ships than one would dream. It seems inconceivable. A
continue effective for 200 years. Ships sailed carrying cargo and slaves.
Non-violent. In the face of the violence that we've been experiencing for the past 400 years, is actually doing our people a disservice. In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
Inside, if that ain't it, you
I'm called Professor X, the Overseer. In the early 1900s, a brother set out on voyage. His mission, black nationalism. His oath, freedom or death. In the 60s, brothers like Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, the mission, black nationalism. The oath, freedom or death. In the 90s, the mission, black nationalism. The messengers, X-Clan. The movement, Black Watch. The oath, freedom or death. By the way.
Freedom or death, you shall all be moved. Vanglorious. This is protected by the red, the black, and the green. With the key.
Abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals labeled me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word. A stick called verb, a black steel nerve. Teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really? Then they labeled me a sin. When a brother just speaks what's within. I guess I'm blacker than the shadow in the darkest alley that they're always scared to go in. Boo. I wear boots and beads, bags and braids. Stick and scroll, rings and shades. Walk in the light of the moon, but I've never been a Batman. African, call it black man. Brother, extract the African steps in your movement. Enhance for improvement. Grand funk, I knew a home for the phrase. Funk and lesson, the pathway.
Ready or not, yeah.
And cornbread, how can you act this? I exist on a plane with a jar of my brain. I'm living to retreat cells. Antenna my stick, picture bigger, native liquor, figure. The plume of the trigger goes doom, not boom. Not a bunch of sissies, but saviors braver. The red, black, and green. It's just so much more than red, black, and green. You ask what I mean, but yet the sundown shades and lights a dream. Watch too late, oops, upside your head. You drop through a bit like lead. Where you going? What's your speed? What's your pleasure? What's your need? Trees and branches, roots and seeds. Forward, backward, many degrees. Questions, answers, what's the sum? We have come.
Out of the darkness in panther skin comes darkness, driving pink caddies, bearing the remedy to your existence. Yes, it gets blacker with a Nat Turner lick. Martin, Adam, Malcolm, Huey, there's a party at the crossroads.
Black people are treated very much as the Vietnamese people or any other colonized people because we're used, we're brutalized, the police in our community occupy our area, our community, as a foreign troop occupies territory. And the police are there not to, in our community, not to promote our welfare or for our security and our safety, but they're there to contain us, to brutalize us and murder us, because they have their orders to do so. And just as the soldiers in Vietnam have their orders to destroy the Vietnamese people, the police in our community couldn't possibly be there to protect our property because we own no property. They couldn't possibly be there to see that we receive the due process of law for the simple reason that the police themselves deny us the due process of law. And so it's very apparent that the police are only in our community, not for our security, but the security of the business owners in the community, and also to see that the status quo is kept intact.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In the Sense of the People, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair Nat Turner, co-host myself, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, there will be no Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chairman, Matt Turner, Black Power Comrade, all power to the people. Can you hear?
Yes, sir, my brother, man, right on. Black Power, all power to the people. Yeah, I want to welcome those, again, who are listening, whether it's 1, 10, 100, or 1,000, to another show, In Defense of People Radio. As my comrade said, brother from Bassi's political party, we are a revolutionary organization. We make no apologies for that. There's nothing wrong with being a revolutionary. As a matter of fact, it's normal to be a revolutionary when things have gotten abnormal. And you would be abnormal to not be a revolutionary in order to straighten it out to make things normal again. You know, and that's law. That's a natural law. There's no synthetic or mechanical thing to it. A cause and effect, a response to a situation, whether it affects one positively or it affects one negatively. And these are all natural laws. If anybody wishes to or desires to or seeks to try to refute that, feel free. Just as sure as there is a day like there will naturally be darkness due to the movement of the different physical bodies out in what's called interstellar space. there could be no Frankenstein without a Dr. Frankenstein, which is law. The problem is that there have been those who only can pretend that Frankenstein somehow is his own creation, that Frankenstein somehow had the capability, the knowledge of science and what have you to create himself. And just so as is the first human beings on the planet, there would have had to have been some type of agency, some type of process which laid the foundation to have the first human being come upon this part of the universe on this so-called planet in a strategic place, strategically located, which is the mother continent, the mother of all continents, the continent of Africa. Where there's water, there's life, there's law, according to the laws of nature, and so forth. Show as frogs don't give birth to frogs. There's no hatching of the bunny out of the egg, so forth. These are natural laws that show us the snake reconstitutes itself periodically, where it sheds its old skin into his new skin, into a regeneration, so to speak. And this is what the oppressed masses of the people are going to have to go through, in particularly black people, in the larger non-white society, black and brown people, who have been the most economically, politically, socially depressed, repressed, and so forth through oppression. So in the process, Dr. Frankenstein methodically plots something to create in his lab as a scientist, as a mad scientist, with the goal and ambition, a goal and ambition to do what? A goal and ambition, once Frankenstein gets out, to terrorize. And this is the outcome in the beginning and then in the middle part of the story, until eventually at the end of the story, Frankenstein turns on Dr. Frankenstein. Frankenstein's matter of fact is the alter ego, Dr. Frankenstein. The person that Dr. Frankenstein on the slick fantasizes to be or imagines himself as being big, strong, and overpowering. Dominate. And this is in the subconscious of Dr. Frankenstein. Now, there have been those who over the decades who have recognized what I'm speaking on here, who have even gone so far as to pinpoint the particular type of so-called white man whose idea was to create Frankenstein due to this commonality in the name. There are those who study family names and whatnot can trace genealogies and lineages back to Europe and whatnot and so forth. And in general, more times than not, it appeared that the last name, Frankenstein, is basically a combination of Franken and Stein. And these two last names you will find more commonly under the white segment minority of the so-called white world race, which refers to itself as Jewish. And you will find these last names in common among them. To my understanding, these last names are, I believe, German or whatnot. But that deep into it. You understand what I'm saying? And of course, you know, there'll be those who will accuse this type of understanding or recognition as being anti-Semitic or anti-Semite or what have you. And that's just due to a criticism on the part of certain people who have become politically conscious as to the segment of the white ruling class, which includes the rich white Jew and the power that the rich white Jew has accumulated over the centuries, you see. So this is just a rundown in a sort of way to add more context to it, because it's, again, there's a meaning in the story behind Frankenstein, you know, which I attempted to explain, and so. With Dr. Frankenstein being at ease of his creation, he's achieved his goal, you know, in his creation. And as I said, you know, Frankenstein becomes the alter ego of Dr. Frankenstein. In other words, there have been other movies, books that have been written, and particularly let's say things like the movie Scarface. Of those who've seen Scarface, came out in the 80s or what have you. Where Al Pacino plays Scarface, you know, he comes from a Cuban background when he had the Cuban boat lift and all the defectors who were fleeing what had started becoming what the Europeans like to refer to as communist Cuba, the ideology of communism, socialism, as opposed to capitalism, which is its contradiction. And so these are the pro-capitalist, pro-American, pro-democratic induced believing people who believe that they come to America to escape, you know, Castro, without it even being looked at even a much more deep perspective, as I said, in terms of ideology. And so the movie Scarface, the creator of the movie Scarface, I believe Martin Scorsese, Scarface is Martin Scorsese's alter ego. At one point, to my understanding, had a drug issue, drug problems. And so Scarface became this alter ego in the character. And that's the idea. That's the sort of thing of what the alter ego is. It's like you can imagine being something that you would like to be, okay, and fabricate it in your mind first. And then once you fabricate it in your mind, then you bring it out into manifestation, into fruition, into a physical form, a physical body, what have you. And so this is what America has done. This is what the system of capitalism has done. And this is why, you know, we chose, you know, tonight's title for the show, you know, because there's too much bullshit in explanations that don't explain and conclusions that don't conclude. As Chairman Fred said, the leader of Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, who was assassinated December 4th, 1969, for having a particular type of understanding of the situation. In essence, understanding, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, you know, hand and glove thing, you know. But it's too much bullshit as far as trying to explain the conditions, the situation that Black people collectively find themselves in, barring those who would love to believe that this is the greatest place in the world to live due to a shortage of memory, collective memory, a personal response to a collective situation when the light switch is on and when the light switch is off. You know what I'm saying? So contrary to what they may say, who are in the very, very, very tiny, tiny minority, in the scheme of things under the system, who have actually been allowed access to material comfort and material luxury. What some sisters may know, I was coming up when I was a young man, you know, and, you know, I would hear sisters or even encounter sisters who were talking about meeting a man, you know, and have financial stability. And this is what the system has done to a segment of Black women. Black women have, as a matter of fact, it can be argued that Black women have suffered the most than any other group of people in this country, whether race, you know, the sexes, or what have you, due to the irreconcilable differences with the capitalist system. And so the Dr. Frankenstein has been responsible for a lot of things that Frankenstein has carried out. Now, some may see this as an excuse. Some may think that I'm attempting, you know, to excuse Black people who haven't lifted themselves up by the bootstrap, you know, this old American saying about lifting oneself up by the bootstrap, when in actuality the same people who have spit that bullshit have been the same ones who had a leg up already. They didn't have to lift themselves up by the bootstraps or whatever you want to call that, pulling up their socks or britches or whatever. They had gotten a hand out in the first place. That lifting oneself up by the bootstrap is some fancy jargon to lure the masses into a situation where they become vulnerable to those who seek to dominate. And those who seek to dominate, these are the proprietors of what's referred to as the state. What do we mean by the state? Once again, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, who work hand in glove with a concerted effort to keep the structure intact the way that things are as we see them today. From 1501, 1555 to 1619, in those three time frames, who have sought to keep the same hierarchy intact, who have become much more sophisticated in their dealings with those who would be considered in these Western European terms that they use in the so-called Middle Ages, who will be referred to as serfs, the outcasts, the lower class segments of society who have, in one instance, who have become useless eaters. And so therefore, these useless eaters have become, therefore, really expendable. So expendable that you can kill them, you can harm them, you can murder them, and you can throw them in prison. And it's all right. It's okay, according to the particular type of system that we live. In the meantime, there's always blowback. This is a law of nature too. The Hindu people refer to it as karma. In the scriptures, those who are Christian, those who understand from a biblical perspective, which is the rock of Christianity. In the Bible, it says you reap what you sow. Some go further than that. Some go deeper than that when you say you reap what you sow. And they quote the scripture where it talks about a head from here, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, life for a life. And then, of course, there's those who would say, well, this is the New Age. That's the Old Testament. We're not under the law of the New Testament. And so I said, okay, well, when Jesus was preaching or proselytizing about ushering in the new kingdom or the kingdom that's to come, there were those who had come to him and said that they wanted in. And one of those who came to him had a lot of coins. And he asked to see one of the coins. The coin had a image emblazoned with Caesar's face on. Today we see that as the quarter, the dime, the nickel, and the penny, with the same Caesars on the same coins that have become of value in the capitalist system. And so Jesus told him, take your wealth and go feed the poor, in essence. And this is where we're at. And it is the Dr. Frankenstein that the people have been steered away from collectively. They've been made to be afraid of Frankenstein and not Dr. Frankenstein, or to be conscious of him. In the meantime, they are the Frankenstein. And so if you look out here in the streets, and what the great revolutionary founder of the Black Panther Party and philosopher Huey P. Newton state about the hood, the neighborhood, whatever you want to call it, the community being the occupied top, at the behest of Dr. Frankenstein. And Dr. Frankenstein, being so drunk off himself, his alter ego and everything, get Dr. Frankenstein forgets that at some point in time, there will be blowback. So if you look at the system, the so-called capitalist system, it is in a crisis. It is in a crisis. And people, the common masses of the people, are feeling it each and every day. And so what tends to happen is frustration. And it gets to a point when the frustration may turn into some type of action. Now, this may not be no monolithic action where all the people, 1,000 people, all 1,000 of them get together and they decide that they wanted to go after Dr. Frankenstein. It may be enough of them in the room who have reached that conclusion, who have gotten to that point, they've gotten to the breaking point. But what usually happens is that it's internal due to the demographics. We were taught, those of us old enough, our elders, experienced segregation, Jim Crow, the so-called Reconstruction period, period that's supposed to reconstruct the hierarchy and put us all on equal foot. And those of us understand that, we simply understand it as rhetoric. And it was able to reconstitute itself, the system, the white ruling class, the planter class, the slave master, slave owners, who controlled all the stocks and the bonds and the shares in the companies and corporations that have morphed into the companies and corporations that you see today, that are dominating the society today, which in essence is nothing short of fascism. A combination of the government and the corporation. What we know is a combination of the state and the cartel. The capitalist cartel, and of course, profit motive is their religion. And capitalism is their Bible. They give the masses of the people the holy book, while their holy book is capitalism, which is a contradistinction to one another. One contradicts the other. And so this is Dr. Frankenstein on one end and Frankenstein on the other, unbeknownst to him. Because he's so drunk off himself, his rule, his white male patriarchal rule, these peppercorn hair, I mean these pepper, yeah, these salt and pepper hair, white men who conduct business every day in the CBD and all the cities across the country. From the banking system to the politician. And when things get a little out of hand, or when things get a little fresh, or when a contradiction comes to a head, the natural has to end up in the so-called judiciary system, or the judiciary branch of the capitalist structure. And this is why the judges sit up there on what they call the bench. And the bar is set so high that the average Joe and Joanne don't even stand a chance. And so this is why we say that it's the politician, the businessman, and now we're getting around to the judge. And what is the judge's role in the capitalist system? The judge's role, in first and foremost, is to spew nothing but rhetoric, to pretend to uphold ethics, morality, and the highest forms of, what's that word I'm looking for here? The highest form of human relationships with the so-called masses of the people within this jurisdiction. They have been given the yeoman's task of making a decision that is supposed to be based on right-mindedness. In ancient Africa, referred to as Maat. And Maat is the principles, seven codes, or seven laws that we as Pew's political party attempt to follow on a daily basis. And one of those is reciprocity. And so the judge's role is what? It's to protect the property class, it's to protect the corporate owners, protect the corporate interests, to protect those who own the shares, the stocks, the bonds, and whatnot. In other words, the working class people, the SOL, which is a source of labor on these plantation jobs, are not getting their full benefits from the corporation. Those who have collected the benefits have not broken bread with those who produce for them in order for them to accumulate capital. So there's another pot of gold, if you will, that's kept from view. And so they're all halving it up with one another. They all split it up with one another. For example, the 2008 stock market crash that was strategically planned, as a matter of fact, there's no coincidence. There are these so-called experts, these Hegelian experts who attempt to refute those who understand that it was an orchestrated effort to consolidate. They did it before, and they did it before, and they did it before the time, before the time for that. And so these talking heads are trying to blame it on incompetence, ineptitude, terrible judgment. To do what? To keep the masses of the people from rising up, or to quell the potential rising of the people from against what they call the so-called 1%, who are the greatest, the best tax cheats that America has to offer to the world. And so that is an example of what they do. And when they robbed and stole all the money, they divided the money, they divvied the money up among themselves. It is no different than when two or three soldiers get together, or three or four or five soldiers get together and rob one of their banks. And divvy up the money among themselves. It's one and the same. The only difference is weapons was used on one end and some very cunning strategy was used on the other. And that is how they were able to loot, to steal the money, and then turn back around and threaten the people with a shutdown, which would have thrown everything into chaos. That is a Machiavellian tactic. One of the rules that Machiavelli taught the prince was that every now and again, you create a boogeyman. And let the boogeyman fester. And the boogeyman festers and festers and festers till he have enough people afraid of him. And then you step in and take the boogeyman down. And that is what they did. Now, how were they able to pull that off? According to some of the masses of conscious people who began to understand the shit. The money that came from the people themselves. But they got none of the money that was divvied up between a handful of players in the game who actually can bet, because this form of betting is actually legal. It's only legal because they're able to get a cut of the shares or divvy up the money. So if they're not able to get a share or cut of this money, then they're gambling, they're betting. The shit is illegal. It was legal to own slaves. It was legal to rape black women. It was legal to murder and kill. And what they call today is qualified immunity. Now, all these things are building up into something. It's like pressure when a water pipe finally breaks. because it has been building up so much, so it no longer can take the pressure. Everyone who understands that, or everyone who sees that, understands that, it is clear to them. There's no confusion. There's no doubt. There's no uncertainties. It's only a contradiction. What is the contradiction? It is the pressure on the pipes. So the pressure had to stem from somewhere. Other than that, it's an unnatural occurrence. And so where did the pressure derive from? In order for the pipes to get into a frenzy, into a convulsion, and then a catastrophic event takes place, like the Fukuyama power plant in Japan during and after that tsunami that came in and literally destroyed that island. A cause and effect. This is what we're talking about with Dr. Frankenstein. Frankenstein did not have the wherewithal to create himself. As a matter of fact, to make sure that Frankenstein didn't understand himself, to have become not conscious of himself, Dr. Frankenstein only gave him but so much of brain power. Until eventually, through experience and the transformation of an experience which transformed Frankenstein. In other words, Frankenstein's conscious level was that of a low person and understand until his consciousness became heightened and he found the contradiction. It was his maker. And this is where we hit. John F. Kennedy said, and this was a white man, probably the most beloved white president in the history of America. When he was sizing up the conditions, the situation himself, the contradictions himself. And this is why a lot of people had such terms of endearment for him when he was assassinated by the same forces we're talking about. Black, brown, red, yellow, and white, obviously. And after reaching these conclusions that conclude an explanation that explained, what did John F. Kennedy state? What did he say? He said that those who made peaceful change impossible make violent revolution inevitable. Those who make peaceful change impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And that is a law, a social contract between one man and another man, one group and another group, one nation and another nation. And within that, it can be the same two people from the same so-called race or the same ethnic tribe or the same ethnicity, whatever you want to call it. Or the same two groups can be a contradiction of one of the other within the same race. And the two nations can be a contradiction of one another within the same continent. And we've seen these contradictions. We've seen these polarities in Europe. Historically, we refer to as World War I, World War II. And of course, there's a battle on a much larger international scale, where it's one country from another continent against another country from another continent. And more times than not, that ends up being racial, or it ends up being based on religious affiliation. And in the midst of that, one has to be Dr. Frankenstein and one has to be Frankenstein. Classic example, what the Europeans called the Middle East, what they called the Near East. Of course, if there's a Middle East, then there must be a Left East and a Right East. If there's a Near East, it must be a Far East. And if there's a Far East Asia, then it must be a Far West Asia. And so if you look at what they call the Middle East, what do you see? It can be a classic example to understand what is Frankenstein and what is Frankenstein doing. How Frankenstein got to be Frankenstein in the situation that he's in due to the one who was responsible for the contradiction, which is Dr. Frankenstein. And so Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen had become the Frankensteins of Dr. Frankenstein, particularly individuals like one Zbigniew Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, and all these other players in the game. What Madman Donald Trump speaks about sometimes as the deep state. Donald Trump himself is a Machiavellian and he's a Hegelian. It's just that it's quite difficult to see it at times because the game is getting more strategic and more complicated and more subtle. And so who created the Mujahideen? Who financed it? Who gave them the logistics, the weapons, and everything else? Who supplied them? And it's always blowback. The relationship between the state through the CIA and the Pentagon, and all these other people, with the people as cannon fodder in the middle. And that eventually came to a head with help on 9/11. And there's still to this day the loved ones' victims or the victims' loved ones, who to this day is still pressing ahead to get to the bottom of it, still pressing ahead to file charges against the state. Because they say that murder doesn't have statute of limitations. And that is one of the most potent forms of Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein. But the trick is to do what Machiavelli said. Scare the people enough to where they come to you for protection. And when you come to them for protection, it's not necessarily free. When you come to them for protection, that means you are being subjected to something. And when you're being subjected to something, you cannot possibly, more times than not, then be thinking properly, 100% fully straight and cognizant in your thought paths to realize that you're being manipulated. It is only after, when everything is settled down, you realize that you've given up your so-called civil liberties, your so-called freedoms under this Constitution. And we spell Constitution, capital C, capital O, capital N, small s-t-i-t-u-i, and so forth and so forth. in order to get the people to understand what the Constitution is, because image is everything. We all know what a con is. We all know what a con artist is. At some point in time, we've all been conned at least once. It is only after, when we've settled down, we realize that we've been conned. Now, some of us have went to get revenge. And it turned deadly. And so could that possibly fill what the scripture says? You reap what you sow. Or is karma time? And so when you come to him and you look for their protection, you give up something. Because they're pulling you more and more and more into the rabbit hole. Out of that comes the blowback. Some of it's spontaneous. Some of it's organized. Some of it's well-planned. Some of it's conscious. Because there are those who have reached the brink, and those who have gotten to the point where Frankenstein has got to deal with Dr. Frankenstein and bring about his demise. And you can almost throw Dracula in the sense. And this is a sort of a sentiment for women, this Dracula thing. A knee-jerk response to the feminine, the womb, the vagina. But the response to deal with the one who's put out there to scare the masses, so the state can end up as the hero. And this is what they refer to as the war on terrorism. The war on terrorism, no more, no less than the strategy to encapsulate the earth, to dominate the natural resources, to the Anglo-American establishment's dependency on certain natural resources that the Anglo-American establishment doesn't have underneath his feet. And so in the midst of that, you see pockets of resistance, pockets of rebellion, because the people have reached the brink. That law that pushes them over the edge. And eventually, they become the Frankensteins that Dr. Frankenstein created. As a matter of fact, in Zimbabwe, under the leadership of the great Robert Mugabe and his right-hand man, his military genius, they actually would shoot footage. And he would make these political commentaries when speaking about the British Crown. And he actually thanked the British Crown for making him for who he was or who he had become. Because he appreciated the trials and tribulations that he went through to get to the point of where he at as a guerrilla player in the game. And therefore, throwing off the yoke of British imperialism in Zimbabwe. Like some people years later down the line know, they come back and thank their old coach, you know, for making them the man that they are today. Now that they're playing in the NFL. Now that they're the CEO of American Express. If it wasn't for Mr. Johnson, stand on my ass. I don't know where I'd be today. If it wasn't for Missy Lane, stand on my little sassy ass. I don't know where I'd be today. And so that is an example of there could be no Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. And that brought about the liberation of Zimbabwe. If you look at Algeria, same shit, same scenario, same equation. Same equation. The French, elite ruling class. Those who owned all the shares, the stocks, the bonds in the French corporations in their empire. In Africa, the scramble for Africa that took place in the 1880s. And the same results. The French gendarmerie is the equivalent of the police terror squads that they have in America. The same terror that black men are under here in America is the same terror that Algerian Muslim men were under French rule in Algeria on their land until eventually the FLN came into existence. The National Liberation Front. And they struggled. Even though they were out what? May have been outgunned and so forth. You know, the French and their aerial forces and so forth. But it was the will and the determination of the Algerian people. Just like it was the will and determination of Frankenstein to finally turn his forces on Dr. Frankenstein, the shit out of him. There could be no Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. These things just don't rise up out of a vacuum or just jump up out of the sea with no predicate. And this has been the problem collectively for black people, the descendants of the Africans who were brought here by the force of violence, or the violence of force, and made to be the free SOL class for the rich white ruling class to build their economy into what it is today. Out of that was fabricated a leadership that would do what? Would serve the state. And of course, you know, you may get a little sensitive here. You know, you start naming some names and, you know, the right of the people to be critical of the leadership if the people are following he or she, him or her. None of them is above that. None of us, none of us, due to that we failed to make the connection. We've been lobotomized in our minds, which prevents us from making the connection between Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein. All we know and all we see is the Frankenstein, the older people, the elders. It's the roof, the wall, and the foundation, which is the floor, those three there. The elders, the now leadership generation, and the young people. And in between that is those who are on the heels of the now leadership generation. Those of you who are in your 30s and your 40s. But specifically in your 30s, we failed to make the connection between Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein. All we can see is Frankenstein, and so we live in fear. And there you go again, the Machiavellian strategy, tactic. This is why they set up legislation. This is why they put certain things on the table as a voting measure. This is why certain agents, talking heads, political pundits run for office. This is why there are foundations, philanthropists, the lobbyists, the corporate lobby, the lobbyists. Of course, you know, they call it the lobbyists because, you know, you know when you go to the halls of the crack house, what most people know as the White House, you know, in the lobby, doing what? Pushing measures for corporate interests. And the people have no clue. And so one of those is what? Police measures, exploiting synthetic fear, conscious fear, plotted fear. When you create the material conditions for it, you get concrete realities. But as I said, those who have been leading us have failed to get the people to make the connection. And if we base these on natural laws, then we can see. As a matter of fact, some white boy 200-something years ago, maybe 300 years ago, I believe his name was Hugo Grotius or something like that. This is the European who was Dutch, I believe, who with these corporations that were set up, these corporate entities that were set up, these companies, these earliest companies that were set up, the Dutch East India Company, you know, somewhere along that, the British East India Company. And he wrote this thing about international law, the laws of war. And it is this Dutchman who has laid down the foundation for international law based on war. And they've taken that and have moved in the exact way. And they were able to do what? Confiscate. And so inside of that, you created the conditions. And the conditions fester until they become so concrete, where if you have the people in what they call the herd effect, herded off over into a particular area by design. In Africa, Southern Africa, they refer to as the Bantustans. The Bantustans is no more, no less than the motherfucking than the ghetto. And of course, white Jewish people, you say ghetto, they can relate to that because they was in the ghetto, and this term about ghetto had crossed over the seas from Europe, Central Europe, what have you, Eastern Europe, and boom, and now it's a transformation from white Jewish people to a bunch of niggas. In India, you have what's called the caste system, where it was pretty much the paler skin groups at the top and the darker skin groups at the bottom. The darker skin groups at the bottom have become known as the untouchables, the Dalits. And literally, the untouchables. Because those who are at the top wouldn't literally shake the one at the bottom's hand, or let alone touch his arm or any part of his body, for the psychological reason that they will be defiled. Sort of like the Muslims when they enter the mosque, you know, they remove their shoes right, due to a psychology of removing one's shoes. Even some people, you go to the, you know, to their residence, you know, you remove your shoes, you know. Now, some of that could be for material reasons. We have some of us who, got these wooden floors, you know, and, done, shellac and everything that, heels can do damage to the floor. Now, that's for material reasons, which is borders on the extreme. They will be casualties, like, real quick in a cataclysm. All they would have is just wealth. So you take these conditions and you provide all the necessary things to them in the positions that they're in, and they become what? Dependents. This is when people filling out their income tax, you know, and you see some Frankenstein shit there where people have gotten among themselves and they hustle. But the number one factor is the fear thing. The fear without even any type of critical analysis of it. We have people's political parties say you want to convert blind rage into conscious power. And that's to piggyback on what Huey P. News said about power's ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. And some people say, oh, well, you know, he go with that shit again, this philosophy and whatnot, quoting Huey P. Newton and all that kind of shit. Well, look, it's enough of us been quoted Dr. King. I can't remember going to one speech, event, gathering, not one time did I hear any of them niggas quote Huey P. Newton. Now one of them. Not one. Let alone even mention Marcus Garvey's name. Period. But they will mention the people who was opposed to Garvey. A. Philip Randolph, Bayard Rustin, Alain Locke. People like that. So we see that as collusion. And which is why the people today haven't really made the connection between Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenstein. But in their subconscious, some kind of way, they know this shit fucked up. They know something wrong here. They know something ain't right. Until somebody comes along, the right brother or the right sister, and can get the people to see themselves in the whole matrix. And those become the conscious Frankensteins, and it's all downhill from there. Dr. Frankenstein's days of rule over them is over. I'll give you another example. You take the street tribes on the West Coast, or even in Chicago and the Midwest, and you look at the street tribes, what the European calls gangs. Now, on one end, they romanticize their gangs, these gangs in New York in the 20s, the 40s, the 50s, and so forth. They made a movie called The Gangs of New York due to the contradiction between the lower class whites, the scum of the earth, the beggars who panhandle, the white trash even. What did they do? It formed in the gangs. This story doesn't get told. Due to the inherent contradictions with the white ruling class, they formed in the gangs in New York. and they were petty criminals and so forth. They could be no Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. See, it's all right to analyze that period in American history and then romanticize it in TV movies in Hollywood, because they pull out the sociologists and all these people, the psychiatrists and the psychologists and all these people, and they break that shit down. They break that shit down. And then you say, oh, now I understand. Now I get it. Well, guess what? We got to change the system. We got to change the system. Do you change the system or do you demolish the system? Is changing the system and demolishing the system the same thing? Will they give the same results? George Washington was about changing those systems. George Washington was about demolishing that rule over them. And so they came to blows over that shit. They declared their independence. And they simply said that it is the right of the people to demolish that system. If those who have been placed over them to rule them in good faith and in honesty and integrity and in ethics, and most of all, what these Europeans have the nerve enough to claim is morally, that all men were treated equal. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or whatever that shit is, justice. That's why back in the 80s, the brothers and sisters started saying, shit, just us. Especially when Rodney King almost got beat to death. We started saying, shit, what they mean is just us. Damn the rest of y'all. They made their move. And so if you take that situation with the gangs in New York, And who came out of that, as a matter of fact? Who was some of the, who came out of that? Look, Hollywood has even made movies about that shit. They've even made movies about it. And some of the most fierce gangs were these Jewish gangsters, white Jewish gangsters. Once Upon a Time in America. That's the name of the series. Once Upon a Time in America. Watch those movies. Watch those series of movies. And they show you. They show you. It's immigration, period. You know, New Amsterdam, which was the East Coast, up around where New York is. Once Upon a Time in America. And they romanticize this shit. They show you how they came up, and today they're the ones who run the corporations. So it was a one group coming up in the underworld and gotten themselves into the game and then took that shit and flipped it into corporations. And if you think I'm bullshitting you, check out Seagram's Empire, Crown Royal, the old Barnes and Bartles and James wine coolers, Prohibition. Check all that shit out. You tell me that and flip that into what? Into the record industry. Universal Records, Universal Music. If you think I'm bullshitting, check it out. So how does this equation fit in a Dr. Frankenstein of Frankenstein? Class issue. And they found ways to survive by being in the underworld. In the 40s, the 30s, the 40s, this era with Malcolm X when he was young. You know, Joe Louis and all these people, right? Rocky Marciano, I got the shit whipped out of them. You know, the first, you know, Jack Johnson, all these people, the first black, you know, heavyweight, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, the champ and shit. They had a Negro version of the white underground in places like Chicago. The numbers game, the racket, Detroit, you know, New York, Midwest to the East. And, of course, this is the era, of course, you know, the jazz shit start kicking in, you know. Scott Joplin and all these people, right? And it's the same effect. The ability of Dr. Frankenstein to create conditions that drive people into something else. And they actually became conscious of the shit. But it wasn't raised high enough to where they become the revolutionaries like George Washington and his little crew of white stockholders did. Until Malcolm X came along. Till Marcus Garvey came along before Malcolm, whose dad was the Garveyite, his parents. And so this is the slogan, Africa for the Africans. There could be no Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. This is a response. This is a natural response. And if you, and you even look, you take black women from the plantation all the way to the day, how they've had to hustle, how they've had to sacrifice their own bodies just to keep food on the table, just to keep a roof over their heads, with no black man in sight to defend their interests. None whatsoever. Now, if it was tenement alone, yeah, you had a couple of badass brothers. Matt Turner, Denmark Vesey, Gabrielle Prosser, David Walker. That was our foundation. David Walker said, "Will come a time when the slave master will get caught with his pants down, and it'd be incumbent upon the slave to sever the slave master's head from his shoulders. And if the slave does not make that move, then he deserves to be treated like a goddamn slave." In the meantime, the state was preparing itself for its inevitable end of physical slavery. It was already thinking ahead. But it never gave up the reins. But in the back of their minds, they knew that somehow, some kind of way, these niggas owe us. Because we owe them. So what did they do? They made the move to create the leadership. If you think I'm bullshitting, if I'm making some up, there's a book written by Manny Marble, How Capitalism Underdeveloped Black America. He documents it well. How the Carnegie family and these rich white philanthropist families, or better yet, these rich white families who had taken a portion of their wealth and put it into these, like these trusts and these foundations. The foundation bought the goddamn airliner. The foundation bought the jet. And they were instructed by certain cats who just so happened to be Jewish. Ivy League, Ever Benes, who just happened to be Jewish. In the arts of propaganda. Through what? Marketing. to lobotomize your mind, your brain. Diamonds is a girl's best friend. That is the ultimate one for women. Try getting married and tell her you won't marry her and don't show up with a ring. Try that. Try that. Now, I'm not saying it's all women, because some women will marry you regardless if you put a ring on her finger. Those are the ones that's really priceless. But in the arts of bullshit. And so what they do, they crafted the leadership. Because they knew that somehow, some kind of way, they created all these Frankensteins. And understanding that story and so forth, of course, we're talking about the, you know, the 1880s, 1890s and whatnot. Of course, you know, somebody said, well, how the fuck are they going with Frankenstein didn't come out of the stones and so on. So, yeah, you're right. But that don't mean it didn't exist before. Because they knew at some point in time that they were responsible for the conditions. And the conditions create attitudes, and the attitudes naturally end up leading in some type of action. Now, there ain't but two types of actions. There's unconscious actions and conscious actions. You could be doing something unconsciously just about it, not knowing it. You know, and then, you know, you end up, you know, having to apologize. Whereas there are also those who, or pretend they not knowing that they kicking you on your ass. As long as you don't say nothing or do nothing about it, then when you come around in the consciousness, and then they say, I didn't really mean any harm, even though I've been kicking you up your ass all this time. Because they know that they're the Dr. Frankenstein that's creating the Frankenstein. So they got to beguile the Frankenstein until the shit run out. And this is the law of nature. And it is getting really, really, really funky in this country. It's getting funky. And it's almost at rock bottom. And these Europeans, they know that they're responsible for this shit. There's a NASA document that even speaks about their ambitions for the future, that we know we're going to create more crime because of our ambitions. Everybody ain't included. As a matter of fact, it ain't but a small portion of motherfuckers included. And so you see all these little Frankensteins out here on the streets. Once becoming conscious, it's over. It's a done deal. And what I said about the street tribes on the West Coast, there's a Dr. George Knox. He's a so-called gang expert. And one of the things that this George Knox had focused on or talked about or whatever, or started playing around with or thinking about and gotten around to realization, was that violence has been the one ingredient that has gotten the job done, that has gotten results. Let me see. How can I say it? It has been the necessary tool to achieve an end to a means, in other words. And so he took violence and placed it in the context of the street tribes after sizing the violence in the form of the United States military. And concluded that was scientific violence. He said that was organized violence, no more nor less. And he said that the U.S. military potential for violence, propensity for violence, is pretty much the same for the appetite and the propensity for violence that the so-called gangs exercise. But then came that but. But what was the difference? And this is what he said. He said the difference was that the U.S. military is organized violence, conscious of itself, whereas the gangs are unscientific and unorganized violence, and that the minute they become conscious of it, he said America's days is pretty much numbered. And there's a paper that he put out called Gangs, Guerrilla Warfare, and Social Conflict. Now, we not so naive, Pew's political party, not so naive to not think or to not believe that we're the only ones that's listening. We're the only ones that's on this electronic device, you know, the airwaves. And of course, there's certain terms, certain expressions, certain whatnots, or certain, you know, that they take into consideration, and you know, they size us up. You know what I'm saying? They size us up. And it's okay, well, this is not orthodox. This is not no orthodox thing, you know, the usual shit, you know, that black people go and listen to, you know, and they talk shop and whatnot, and, you know, feel good shit and, you know, all this type of stuff. You know, like they got these commercials now, the corporation. How's a corporation going to be the linchpin in some new black shit? How that's going to work? You tell me. That's like saying white Jewish people going to allow East Asians to tell them what the new Jew is in the future. You have to be out of your mind. So he wrote the shit. But you can't get it offline. You can't get it online now. As a matter of fact, he wrote many essays. And the essays became a book, something like the Introduction to Gangs or something like that. And the shit that's in there, we have no idea. We have no idea. You know, you're not gonna get in the classroom. Now there may be some class somewhere stashed up here in America somewhere, and more times than not, it's probably a white instructor that has a class. You know, that was able to create a class at a university. You know, there's some of these instructors, they literally creating new classes. But you ain't going to get this in general. And okay, well, how many of us got his book as opposed to having Essence Magazine? How many? You know, the old Jet magazine. You know, brothers go get the Jet magazine just to see the centerfold girl. They ain't give a shit about all the other shit. They just want to see the centerfold girl. You know, they want to see, you know, the next bomb chick, you know, right? But shit, other than that, it's like trying to find a needle in the haystack. And this is what we mean by exposing people to a political education, to heighten their awareness, to heighten their consciousness. You heighten your conscience, you heighten your response to things. You know, pay terrorism, you know, even the situation with the unemployment, all of this shit that affects us in the hood, the so-called crime and the drugs and everything. all of that shit. But there's a lot of Frankensteins that's out there. They got it in them. And that's what Dr. George Knox was talking about. And this is what J. Edgar Hoover meant when he said that we must prevent the rise of a black messiah, one who can electrify the people, and particularly the youth, the young people. And COINTELPRO has never left. It has never went anywhere. It is still here. I talked about the Middle Ages of Western Europe. You know, shit. They romantic, they glamorized Robin Hood. Robin the Hood became Robin Hood. They made a movie about him, Robin the Hood. This is where they get the so-called crime of robbing. He got 15 for robbery. He got 25 for robbery. That's where the word come from Robin the Hood. You know, like the Crusaders, like they call Alexander the Great, which we know him as Alexander the Barbarian, where they call him Robin the Hood. This is why they say, oh, this is the hood. Or they ain't up with a bunch of hoods. You know, that's why they got what's called the hoodie. You know, Trayvon Martin was wearing a hoodie. You dig? And so they romanticized Robin the Hood because of what? The class contradictions. You know, the class contradiction produced Robin the Hood. He was Frankenstein. And he became a conscious Frankenstein. So what was he doing? He was taking from who? The rich. If you think I'm making this shit up, go watch them. And what was he doing? Now, Jesus is warning that rich man. Yeah, that's right. What was the moral to the story? Well, Jesus was warning him that this is what's going to happen to you. And they would claim to be Christians back then. The church, the Catholic Church in Ireland, you know, in Greater Britain, and all that shit. You know, the cathedral, all that stuff. Western Europe, Catholicism, and all that shit. You know? Yeah, Robin the Hood. Robin Hood. But that could only be a movie and a role for a white man. You know? Perhaps we can get Spike Lee, Tyler Perry even, to make a black Robin Hood. Who would he be robbing in the movie? Who would he be robbing? You know, they got Wakanda. They got, you know, Black Panther. You know what I'm saying? You know, who was he fighting against? Man, tell you, this shit is cold. You know, this psychological war, you know? And they, on their last leg, you know, they created their own cancer and is eating at their own leg. And black people collectively gonna be forced to do something. Each one of us like this shit or not. Listen, at some point in time, LeBron James' wealth and fame and the Rolex he got on his watch and the Maybach he may be driving, him and what's his name, you know, the rapper Rick Ross, all that shit not even going to matter. It's going to be worthless. Hey, man, what you talking about, man? That can't happen here. That can't happen here, man. This ain't friends.
You know, this ain't Greece. And Vietnam, that was Vietnam. Man, that was Algeria, man. You know, that was the French. Not here. Not the greatest military in the world. It never happened here. All the technology, I mean, shit. What you talking about, man? They listen to your phone, watch it through your laptop, through your smart television. Where you going to go? What you going to do? Where you going to hide? They got satellites. They got everything. You know? Literally. When the people in Vietnam started off, they had bows and arrows. And by the time they finished, they had their own shit. They were pushing the helicopters over in the Mekong River. It was the determination of the people. It was the will of the people. It was the spirit of those people. They knew and understood that they were going to have to make sacrifices. They knew that shit. They ain't no liberation struggle without no sacrifice. As a matter of fact, cats of my generation and sisters too benefited from brothers who got murdered, beaten up, brutalized, half dead, chased out the country, thrown in prison on trumped up charges, murder, assassinated, lynching every goddamn thing. So they can do what they're doing now. And they turn their backs on the next generation. Got to come behind them. Because they think it's done and said. Now the segregation is over with. But what is gentrification if it ain't segregation? The new form of segregation. The new form of recolonizing people of African descent. Placing them out on what's called the periphery. And so we say transforming blind rage into conscious power. And that getting Frankenstein to realize that his ultimate enemy, cat who responsible for him for being a nigger. Until one becomes a conscious nigga. And I say that because H. Rod Brown said that during the 60s, the white man hated niggas, but he loved them some Negroes. It's the same as Malcolm saying the thing about the house nigga and the field nigga. I am a field nigga, even though I'm light-skinned. Like Detroit Red. So there could never be a Frankenstein without Dr. Frankenstein. The material conditions just didn't rise up on their own. Sure, we all have to make personal decisions. But at some point in time, that personal shit got to take a back seat. Because we all took it personal when George Floyd was lynched. And it brought a collective response. A frightening one. Because the targets were different between George Floyd and Rodney King. And you see what's going on in France or what went down in France. The influence of the rebellions here in America has went around the world. The people in France were inspired about what took place here. And we're going to end on that note. We say stay tuned next week for another short and defensive People Radio brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm your host, National Chairman Nat Turner, and my co-host is our Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our MDJ. I was about to say MZ, but our DJ, our assault technician, and the ones and twos, Sister Amina Ushun, our National Minister of Communication. So stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. East Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another show, Indefensive People Radio. We say black power to black people, particularly. All power to the people, because people should have the power all the time. There's more of us out on the streets who had the power than those who are in power. And we also say your rule. We out of here.
This young lady right there. But isn't it also possible that if the white people, the poor people, the people down in my neighborhood, the white people, those that don't work, those that are on welfare, those that have nothing, if they got together too, and you help us, we'll help you. You help us get up there. You help us get rid of some of these people that are pressing down on us.
No, I say you should be just as active in your neighborhood as we're trying to, as you have been in our neighborhood.
All right, we get our neighborhood so hot. Everybody's going for something. We alone, there are too few of us. There are too many men up there with all their cop cars and everything.
That's what they're always telling you. Never let your enemy tell you how many of you there are. Never let the man that you're against form your opinion. This is the trick that's played on everyone who's oppressed. The first thing, an occupation, when you have a revolution in the country, the first thing you take over is the radio. And then you start telling the people that everybody, the war is over. And so all of them surrender. No, they believe that thing right there. And once they take that over, they start telling you where you are and where they are, and you fall right in line. It's plain thought control. The majority of the American people aren't segregationists. That the majority of the American people aren't imperialists. But the government is, the structure is, the power faction is. So, how then do all the majority go along with it? Because those who sit in power over the television, over the radio, and over the press is constantly telling those who are the masses how free they are. And how this they are and how that they are. So a mistake is made on your part when you think that white people suffer the same as black people. Or as many Jews will say, well, we're a minority too. Or the Irish will say, well, we used to be a minority. No one's a minority like we are. They didn't need civil rights legislation to solve any other minority problems. It didn't take a civil war to solve any other minority problem. It didn't take Supreme Court decisions to solve any other minority problem or legislation. It takes none of that other kind of that action to solve the minority problems of these other people. The only real minority in America is the Afro-American. Now, when white people, who are oppressed and poor, supposedly, but the poorest white person can go where the richest black person can't go. It isn't only poverty in money. That we're talking about, poverty in spirit, poverty in freedom, poverty in equality, poverty in human dignity. This is the kind of poverty we're suffering from. So that the richest Negro in this country is still poor. When it comes to freedom, he's broke. When it comes to human dignity, he's broke. This is the kind of poverty we're talking about. So when you find white people who are poor, with all these doors that there are open to them, any door that you knock on, if you're qualified, it'll open. So when you find a poor white person, he's in bad shape. You didn't know that.